From Community Public Radio, this is CPR Sunday. From New York, I'm Don DeBar, and with us this week, taking a look at this past week's election results, is Professor Anthony Montero, Du Boisian scholar from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So we have protests that have been taking place around the country, apparently, according to the media. Nothing approaching the protests, for example, on February 15th, 2003. We had 250,000 to 500,000 people in the street in New York, for example, according to the official reports, after the day after a blizzard. And now they're talking, you know, a few thousand, you know, at each one of these things. But there's a United Action. I got email from Move On encouraging me to go into the streets with these people. And, you know, the whole not-for-profit industry seems to be pushing that, too. What are your impressions of what's going on?
Well, you know, for some people, there's such a shock. There's such a shock that Hillary Clinton was defeated. Many who didn't vote and declared they would not vote for either candidate, or even voted for Jill Stein, feel that their safety zone or the world that they had inhabited before November the 8th was over, and we had entered, as a result of the election, a dark night of fascism. Of course, it is an untruth. It is hysterical, and it is without political or theoretical understanding. But then there's something else going on behind it all, and I think we would have to trace it back to the Clinton campaign, her funders, and the funders of a good number of these so-called NGOs, non-governmental organizations like MoveOn.org and others, who are now stoking the flames of prolonged civil unrest, because the strategic objective is to guarantee that Trump cannot govern the country as president. They want to delegitimize him, and hence the election of Trump. And the way they delegitimize it, they don't say that that Trump and those stole the election, but that the people who elected him are so dumb that they are disqualified from deciding who will be president of the United States. But what I see now is a long period of political struggle over whether or not Trump will be able to govern for 4 years, and then to guarantee that he will not get a second term. And therefore, and this will be very interesting, to shift the center of governmental power from the three branches to two. And so Paul Ryan and McConnell in the Senate will be the centers of government, and there'll be some kind of fake bipartisanship where they will block everything Trump wants to do, including $1.5 trillion or more dollars for infrastructure development and job creation. Right. Not to mention they want to block his foreign policy, which is based upon no regime change, no nation building, and detente with China and Russia. So these demonstrations, I think, will increase. They will become angrier. They will be stoked by the corporate media, and their so-called leaders will appear on as talking heads on Rachel Maddow and Don Lemon's show and other places, because they have to stop what happened on November 8th. And it's not primarily about Trump. It is about the rising voice of working people which will not just be white working people, but it'll be working people of all races and ethnicities.
Yeah, who were already in motion. I mean, we saw the the people that were behind Sanders as they attempted to tamp that down. They stole the nomination, and they did everything they could to encourage them to either sit on their hands or to join the fold Stronger Together, which failed, obviously. And also the people in the streets. You know, I'm noticing that the effort that they're making right now, forget stripping away power from the executive after Trump becomes president. First, you've got to get past the Electoral College, which people are openly calling for. 2 million signatures they got on a petition to tell them to vote against Trump, regardless of what their law or tradition is with respect to it. And then if that fails, he's, of course, got to get to January 20th without getting shot or having a plane crash or whatever. But they were able to get 2 million signatures in 2 days calling on the Electoral College to rebel and elect Clinton. And, you know, I noticed that they weren't able to get 2 million signatures on any petitions to compel Obama to prosecute killer cops, for example. And they've had a few years to do that now, or to release more than 60 or 120 people that are part of the, you know, 2 or 3 million people in prison for as part of the mass incarceration project. So the priorities of the machine that put this together are pretty clear.
I agree with everything you said. And, you know, we have talked over the months about the political and ideological failure of what goes for the left in this country. And I think it is on full display in the situation now, because it is apparent that they are operating on behalf of the neoliberal establishment, whether it's conscious or not. That's who they're operating on behalf of. And they are operating against the working class itself.
Right.
Now, this brings us to the next thing that we have been discussing over the months, and that is fascism. You know, we have, you and I have said over and over again, if Trump is a fascist, then what does that make Hillary? Or, let's put it another way now, what does that make the neoliberal establishment and their policies of austerity, busting of unions, and war? I think I have said to other people that let us stop using that word for the time being, at least until we define what we are talking about. It is more than anything else a smear of anyone, especially among white working people that you disagree with. And this was an more than an insurgency. I'm talking about the electoral victory. It was an insurrection. It was an insurrection within the ranks of organized labor when 50% or a little more of them voted for Trump. In other words, they voted against the people that brought you NAFTA and want to bring you the TPP.
Yep. And against their own leadership, too. Their own leadership.
That's my point.
Yep.
That's what makes it an insurrection.
Right.
When you get Wayne County, Michigan, which includes as its largest component Detroit, which everybody knows is a majority black city. Well, in that area, in that county, 30% of the votes went for Trump or other candidates that were not Hillary Clinton. It is clear that Trump could not have taken Pennsylvania had 50,000 more primarily black voters either came out or did not vote for candidates other than Trump. In other words, the margin of victory in the popular vote for Trump was measured by the numbers that did not come out. The other thing is that this insurrection against the neoliberal establishment and those in labor, the black community, the Latino and Hispanic communities, and even among women, white women in particular. This cannot be taken lightly, and all of those people, by no stretch of the imagination, were voting for fascism or for fascists to be president.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, the other thing, Don, if I could just say, you know, this whole argument that the election was a white lash, a response of white people to the image of a black president or of a pro-black candidate like Hillary Clinton or a pro-LGBTQ candidate like Hillary Clinton, that this was a white lash. And this is another of the great frauds being perpetrated by the left. White people told us over and over and over again that they were voting for a different direction in the economy. They wanted jobs to come back,
yep.
That we are dying, that we are suffering in these post-industrial cities and towns across the Midwest. We cannot survive, you know, and to discount all of that and to put this kind of post-modern identity politics spin upon what people were saying. Oh, don't believe them. They're too dumb to know what they're talking about. All they know is white and black and racial identity. In other words, they wanted to impose upon working people, especially white working people, the same type of identity politics, but in reverse, that they use to explain the world that they inhabit. And it is nonsense.
You know, on this particular point, and I want to get back to the other thing, but I need to talk about this here. I had a conversation mm-hmm. earlier today with Cynthia McKinney. And I said to her, because while we were talking, it coalesced in my mind exactly how, why it is that you, in particular, were able to parse all of that stuff correctly, and it's what brought me around to look at the class dynamic involved and to look at the question of race within that context. You know, you're a student of Du Bois, and that's exactly mm-hmm. what Du Bois did. He mm-hmm. made it three-dimensional, and that was carried forward by Paul Robeson mm-hmm. and Malcolm and Martin also. The fact that you're talking about class dynamics with the characteristic of racism as one of the dimensions to it, as one of the mm-hmm. driving dimensions to it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so what that means is that the caricature of that people call identity politics here, that is completely devoid of class analysis, doesn't mm-hmm. stand mm-hmm. up to scrutiny. And you can see how it's being played right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree with you. And you know, we have to build the left, and not on the grounds or the terms that it exists now. I have spoken to several friends in the left who are, you know, supportive of the demonstrations and all of that. And I've tried to suggest to them to hold off, that that have you considered how your behavior will be viewed by the masses of working people, especially poor white people? Has it ever occurred to you that they think in more complicated terms than you give them credit for? And has it ever occurred that it's not just where they are today, but the potentiality in the overall situation,
right,
where the neoliberal order around the world is in crisis, especially in the Euro-American advanced centers of capitalism? This is not just an American phenomenon. This is throughout Europe. Now, you can call it an upsurge of the right wing, But one thing people are saying, and they said it in this election, we want our nation back, which means we want it back from the neoliberal elite who have abandoned us and are destroying citizenship, the basic assumption of what it means to be a citizen of a nation. I think that that we're in a crisis. I think we're entering a prolonged period of civil unrest that could go over into something that looks like a 21st century American civil war, and such a civil conflict would be in many ways along class lines with the petty bourgeoisie and the petty bourgeois left and ultra left tending in most instances to side with the ruling oligarchs, and they will be funded to the extent that they continue to stoke the fires of anti-working class protests under the guise that we are standing up against Islamophobia and homophobia and anti-immigrant and other things. This is going to be a profound period that will try the souls of everybody.
You know, you're talking about, and you've said for quite a while, looking at the post-election scenario, we're looking at a country that's becoming more and more ungovernable and will likely continue to do so. You know, going into that, I'm looking at this statement from UNAC, for example, where they recite all of the evils of, you know, Trump's campaign, but leave out the fact that UNAC, being the United National Anti-War Coalition, okay, leave out the fact that he's called for no more regime change, no more, you know, all of that stuff, reevaluating NATO. It actually has no purpose. Purpose was accomplished in 1991. All of this stuff not mentioned by UNAC whatsoever. And instead of coming out with a statement that says, okay, Trump, do you promise these things? We're holding your feet to the fire. And you promise these things, which we oppose. And we're, and those are the things they're raising now. But and they should be raised, but not exclusively. The entire picture, I mean, it's they're blotting out the part that is supposed to be their point of relevance. And they get clever and say, you know, no more bringing the war home. We'll fight it here. Yeah, okay. But the wars that we're about to have that he said we won't have, let's bring them up too. Now, you're going into this condition of chaos and social disintegration or political disintegration in any event, and people are saying that we have to ally against the basket of deplorables instead of against the elite. I'm asking them exactly where their revolution is going to go without the white working class.
Well, I think that exposes a lot of things. I mean, first of all, you have to ask the question, would there be demonstrations if Hillary had won? Now, I agree with a growing number of commentators who have said over the course of this, increasingly so, that the most dangerous threat to international peace politically, the politician that posed the greatest threat to global peace and was the greatest advocate of war and even big power confrontation, is Hillary Clinton. Right. But had Hillary Clinton won, there would not be a whimper from any of these left forces. And the question is, why not? And for an alleged anti-war coalition, and I want to emphasize alleged anti-war coalition, how do you not make common cause, common politics with a person who ran consistently upon a platform that was anti-war? You could if you're an anti-war coalition, disagree with everything else,
right?
And strongly disagree. But on the question of war and peace, he was your candidate in this election.
Yep. He was the only one that brought a discussion of divergent foreign policy to a national election on that stage since Reagan.
That's right. That's right. And no one has ever challenged in this way and at this level the neocon assumptions.
That's right.
How do you explain no demonstrations of this magnitude against Clinton if she wins, but her big tent included all of the most vicious and committed war makers, from Elizabeth, Robert Kagan's wife.
Victoria Nuland, yeah.
Victoria Nuland, I'm very sorry. And Samantha Power.
Yep.
I mean, who can forget her behavior this past spring in the UN Security Council,
right,
over the question of the U.S. military violation of the peace negotiated by John Kerry and Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, and it was overturned by Ash Carter and the U.S. military. And when it went to the U.N. Security Council to be discussed, Samantha Power arrogantly walked out and held a press conference condemning the fact that Russia would even bring this to the U.N. Security Council. The belligerency of the pro-war forces around Hillary Clinton, but no demonstrations, no outcries, no fear, and I put quotes around that, of our future. I am of the opinion that what we call the left, in most of its iterations, are nothing more than arms of the neoliberal establishment. And this raises questions inconvenient questions that we have to ask. Who are these people? Who are behind them? And how do we explain this behavior and these alignments? Because it's obvious that a lot of this is being funded by MoveOn.org and being promoted by the corporate media. It is, you know, given aid and comfort and moral justification by the corporate media. So how do we explain this? I think that we have a morally, not just politically bankrupt, but a morally bankrupt left. And I side with working people who, with all of their problems, are rising up spontaneously and will discover their own leaders. I cast my lot with them, not with these so-called leftists.
You know, you wonder, looking at the world from the perspective of some of these leaders, if they actually have a strategy to win, and if so, how the most powerful ally they could ever have, not Trump, but what Trump has said and is now in the public record, what was reified at the Republican National Convention and at the Democratic National Convention by half the people walking out. That was one of the main issues they walked out over, was the issue of war and peace. Reified in the streets of Cleveland when the leadership of the left went to do exactly this at the RNC and nobody showed up except them. And reified in the streets of Philadelphia when the people were marching all over the damn place against Hillary Clinton and the warmongers.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, I think that says it all. I mean, and some people are going to have to do what you have just done, and think collectively about what all of this means, and to contextualize all of this within the international framework. You have certain so-called left academics saying, for example, that they fear a Trump presidency because he will tear up the neoliberal global economic order, which has brought so many hundreds of millions of people out of poverty. Now, what they fail to mention is that if not 90, maybe 100% of them are Chinese, which had a lot to do with the Chinese policy of state capitalism, and directed economic growth, which tied trade and investment to the well-being of the Chinese people. In fact, the Chinese regime exists and continues to exist because it has delivered more for the people than anyone expected was the case. But that same neoliberal order has decimated the American working people, over half of whom live in poverty. And people have not processed this. Over half of the American people live in poverty or near poverty. Or, you know, I mean, if you say near poverty, you're somewhere close to 70%.
Yeah.
You go into the African-American community. I estimate in Philadelphia, 80% of us live in or near poverty.
You know, not for nothing.
Oh, I'm sorry, forgive me.
No, that's okay. On that point, I mean, you can go a little deeper and broader. Essentially, if you use the benchmark that was used in one study, do you have $1,000 of liquid assets in the event of an emergency? I think it was something like 80% that didn't, or more.
That's right. In other words, 80% of the American people live in precarity. Our lives are precarious, and this is affecting the most educated of our population, like PhDs who are university professors and can only get adjunct jobs, like in other high-tech industries where you get these booms and busts, like with Google, like Yahoo, like Microsoft, where they have these booms and then they collapse. I don't think the left, or what goes for the left, understands the world that we inhabit and do not understand the ongoing crisis of working people, broadly understood. What occurred is that people in the former industrial heartland, what they now call the Rust Belt, rose up.
Right.
And it was an insurrection, the likes of which we have never seen in this country. And it will continue. I don't think those people are going quietly into the night while East and West Coast liberals define them as everything negative, including as fascist and white supremacists. I think they're going to answer, and I hope their answer is not just through the talking heads at Fox. I hope indigenous and organic leadership rises up among them.
Yeah, and you know, maybe we can talk about that in the future, because I'm thinking that people right now ought to be looking at the congressional elections in 2 years and organizing alternative candidates inside both parties and outside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but
Let us not forget, Don. You know, back in the spring, Donald Trump made the statement to Politico that if he were elected in 5 to 10 years. The Republican Party would be transformed into a workers' party.
Right. That's what I was thinking of exactly that when I said it, because that's and actually, you know, people that are married to this, you know, their existing allegiance, the right color sweater or whatever inside that paradigm. So go do it in your party. You know, you have plenty of people in the Democratic Party that are still sitting around smarting over Sanders that are certainly capable of electing dozens of members of Congress. Definitely.
Yeah.
So they just got to decide which districts, for example, and all stay there for a year and do what they just did.
Well, I think the most immediate question is whether we will get to midterm elections.
Right.
The divisions are deep. The civil unrest has already begun. It could become something that looks like a 21st century American civil war, where the divisions are not regional or sectional, but class. In other words, the liberals abetted by the so-called left, are going to take on the working class.
Right.
And in that conflict, on their own they lose, so they would have to rely upon the state to protect them against the rage of the impoverished and precarious working class. And our hope, I would think, is that black and white and Latino workers can find a way to come together on substantive economic issues that affect all sides. It's begun by workers in organized labor rejecting their leadership. It's begun by black folks rejecting their misleadership. So let's hope, going forward, a class alliance can be built. And I would think that what is called the left is not only on the wrong side of history, it is anti-working class in the name of socialism, which is makes it so grotesque.
You know, on that point, and carrying forward the what I raised earlier, I have a suspicion, it's just, you know, a deductive suspicion, mm-hmm. you know, from events and from actions, that it's more, I don't use the word sinister, but it's more conscious in terms of interrupting class unity than just random chance or petty bourgeois ideological or economic self-interest among not-for-profits. Because if it's opportunism at that level, okay, and I'm the head of one of these groups, I'm saying, well, we got to go where the people are. That's where they are right now. And so I'm raising these demands about, you know, war and standing with or holding Trump's feet to the fire, however you do, but standing with the people that elected him on that issue. Because a lot of them did. I saw them in the center down there at the convention, standing up, going crazy when he said no more regime change and all that. By accident or by opportunism, it would lead them to that position, and yet they're going in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. It seems to me more conscious.
Yeah. But surprise, surprise, they were never the left.
Right.
They were always it was always a game for many of them. And a lot of young people, inexperienced, uneducated, to the extent that they are educated, it's in the culture of identity politics and so on. So they will learn the hard way.
Yeah.
They will learn the hard way. And hopefully it will not be too painful, but they will learn, because they're going up against an awakened working class. I don't care how you cut it, it is an awakened working class. And I don't think that's a battle they want to have, because there is no win for them in that battle. And the only safety that they could have in that situation is to align with the state, with the neoliberal order, which I think objectively they're already doing. Because, see, the point of Wall Street and the Pentagon and the elites is to make sure that Trump can't govern, to delegitimate him out the gate, and to say this is a popular mandate, that we don't want him as president, he should not govern anything that he does, especially in regards to three areas, war and peace, and that is coming to a detente with Russia over multiple things, including Ukraine and Syria. The second thing is scrapping these large trade deals that take jobs out of the United States. And the third thing is infrastructure investment. I should add a fourth thing. no cuts or privatization of Social Security or Medicaid and Medicare. I mean, come on, man. It to me is very apparent, you know?
Yes, me too.
So this is a left who is protesting over a perception of something that does not exist. It is an invention, but it is an invention that is promoted by the corporate media in the interest, of the neoliberals who were defeated on November the 8th. They brought them down.
That's right.
And it was a political insurrection, the likes of which none of us have ever seen or perhaps has ever been seen in this country.
Right.
And we dodged the bullet of war. Had Clinton been elected, this is why UNAC is not a peace organization anymore. If Clinton had been elected, we would have been on the fast track to war with Russia. A fast track. We dodged that bullet. But that does not mean that the war makers are not still committed to their objective. They just will do it in other ways by destabilizing the Trump administration, making it virtually impossible for him to put together a government or even to govern. And therefore, secret arrangements and deals will be made with the likes of Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and John McCain and Lindsey Graham and a bipartisanship with Chuck Schumer and other so-called liberal Democrats to rule because Trump cannot govern. And thus the neoliberal project, the neoconservative project of war will go forward in spite of its opposition by Donald Trump and large parts of the working class, those who people said were too dumb to decide the fate of the country. That's what they're saying. Trump is illegitimate because his voters are illegitimate.
That's
and
right.
I find that it so upsets me to hear that type of language. And I can imagine when the people in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, or parts of Michigan, Wayne County, and in Ohio, in Lorain and Cleveland, when they hear themselves described like that, and their children described like that, what is their pain?
Yeah, you know, it would be so easy to raise the list of things that Trump said and put them into a good list and a bad list and say, we stand with you people that elected him on these issues. This is our common ground. If you're ready to fight over it, whether we have to fight Trump or fight with him against the Congress or whatever, this is the anti-war position. We have that in common with you. We'll fight that together. These things he said, we don't impute them to you. We know David Duke's out there and some others, but we don't impute this to you. We're just saying we ain't letting Trump do this stuff, and we ask you to join us in that. That's what you do if you're trying to speak to people and build unity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's not, unity is not on the left agenda, so-called
right.
left agenda. They want a path to revolutionary change that goes around the working class. They have no idea what a progressive or revolutionary coalition looks like. You know, if this is a white lash, if that's all you saw in this election, then you're either blind or you need to get some new lens for examining class and social processes. You know, Don, we don't have a left. Let's face it. We got a bunch of childish, infantile mini groups running around speaking as though they're of the left, they're socialists or radicals, and they're nothing of the sort.
And, you know, the stakes are pretty big. You know, when they raise the specter of fascism, which they, you know, have done and imputed to Trump and the people that supported him, without looking at the issues we're talking about, for example, and by the way, the, particularly the economic ones that generally drive people into an insurrection. You know, by not looking at all of that stuff, they're attempting to obfuscate the class character of it, even people that call themselves socialists. In fact, a lot of them that do. And it takes me back to the stand that was taken in the United States among the left vis-a-vis the Soviet Union. They, you know, found every reason in the world not to stand with this block of socialist countries because their politics was much purer than the politics of those dictatorships, et cetera. You know, and here we are now. They collapsed it, and they gave us fascism that we have been experiencing. You said from the, you know, into a dark night of fascism, you know, from a gray afternoon of fascism.
I mean, you know, the politics of what goes for the left are so questionable, and this goes back over many years now, that I don't know what authenticates these people as genuine leftists outside of the fact of what they claim, that they claim they are the left. I agree with you, Don. I mean, you know, we're and we could be looking at a really deep economic recession. Mm-hmm. You know, if sections of the neoliberal establishment want to throw the country into civil unrest, which it seems that they're trying to play with right now, if that's what they want to do, you know, the politics of chaos, the politics of attempted regime change here in the United States can only lead to a collapse of stock markets and bond markets, and then to probably a great recession. And of course, the tensions in the world will not abate, and therefore we have a push for war in the midst of economic recession, which will come on the heels of this long period of stagnation and impoverishment and immiseration of the working class. And at this point, there is no unified leadership of the working class. What we have are the self-organizing efforts of working people in poor communities to resist the neoliberal order and austerity, and to attempt to fight back in whatever ways they can. But we have a huge task ahead of us. And again, I'll just say this. I mean, the strategy is to delegitimate the Trump election, the 2 million signatures saying that Hillary should be made the president because Trump did not win the popular vote, the demonstrators in the street, the corporate media, the fact that even though there are majority, Republican majorities in the House and Senate, Trump does not represent the Republican Party. He ran against the Republican Party.
Right.
So they will become a part of a delegitimation or stop Trump movement. And this will throw the country into political and social chaos. Yep. The country will become ungovernable. And if a new recession happens, all bets are off. As you know, Trump had consistently attacked the Federal Reserve and Janet Yellen, and this pro-Wall Street, pro-big bank monetary and financial policies that impoverished the rest of us, destroyed our savings and our 401ks and our retirement funds and all of that type of thing, has decimated the social landscape of education. And now we see this corporate Obamacare scheme collapsing all around us. I mean, look, we're entering an uncharted territory politically and socially, and I think the left, so-called, should either get out of the way or declare what they really are, and that is arms and agencies of the corporate elite oligarchs.
You know, with all of that coming to fruition in the coming period, they're attempting to do an extra constitutional coup d'etat.
Yes.
At the, you know, it's
yes.
clear,
yeah.
Even before the inauguration. If that mm-hmm. fails, you're going to see, first, if he doesn't die between, the mm-hmm. Closing of the Electoral College and then when it goes into the joint session in January, by the way, you have the Congress, both houses, that ratify the Electoral College, mm-hmm. which is an essential part of it also, legally. And, I remember watching Al Gore for that whole thing. I played that once a year. On my radio show, I played the video and watched it, where everyone that raised a question about the election there got shut down by the rules that he imposed. And, mm-hmm. and so they couldn't even speak to the point. And now they're going to organize a bipartisan lynch mob, basically. They're going to try. But if that fails, so that's like January 6th or something, I forget what date, but it's early January, then he's got to live to January 20th, and then the impeachment mm-hmm. proceedings will begin almost immediately.
Absolutely.
They'll let the
Absolutely.
Democrats initiate it. There'll be key go-overs from the Republicans, some of them saying, well, we just want an honest process so he can govern,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to
mm-hmm.
be under siege the whole time. He has to configure for himself a power base. And so what he, in my opinion, you know, from my lips to Kellyanne Conway's ears, what he needs to do is he's got to do the outreach. He has to announce a major program that benefits black and brown communities in the
mm-hmm,
country
mm-hmm.
as priority one. He has to take a stand on the wars, that he's starting to really carve that out, and call to the anti-war movement to join him with it. And
mm-hmm.
and basically put these people on the spot.
Yeah, which means in an ironic sense, the possibility for Trump to govern from the left is very possible.
It's almost a necessity for him politically.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. But the so-called left and the so-called liberals are making that impossible. And, you know, I'm still waiting to hear what Bernie Sanders has to say about this. Will he once again betray the people, you know,
yeah.
In this idea of we have to rebuild the Democratic Party, and we will do that by delegitimating Trump and making it impossible for him to govern. So we'll see. We'll see. Mm.
So, okay, I guess on that note, there's one final question I guess we should raise, because we're laying out the landscape. But, you know, we have listeners, people that hear us, and a lot of people do hear us, and especially people on the left, but also on the right. What is it that we should be working on ourselves, like to help force this issue, to try to construct in the streets a workers' party that we could take into the Republican Party if Trump will really have us, or we could stand on our own or force our way into the Democratic Party or whatever, but the actual material wherewithal, how do we construct that?
Well, I don't think we're going to have the two-party duopoly much longer. It's being held together by a thin thread as we speak. The Democratic Party is in a deep crisis, perhaps deeper than the Republican Party, but then to call Trump a Republican is a misnomer. I think Trump is Trump, and whatever that means. So I don't think we have the duopoly that we used to have, but if people are interested in electoral politics at the grassroots and congressional and other levels like that, I mean, this is a good time to put together a grassroots coalition to run as independents to bring down Democrats and Republicans based upon how they stand on infrastructure development, repatriation of capital, war and peace, and jobs. I mean, these are substantive, concrete issues. We have to have those programs. But I think the larger question is whether or not we can bring white and black and Latino and Arab and Asian and all workers together on a common platform of anti-war, jobs creation, anti-austerity, universal single-payer health care, et cetera. And the greatest obstacle to everything that we've just talked about is not Trump. It is the forces assembled in the big tent around Hillary Clinton. You know, I was of the opinion that the Clinton machine had been decimated by this, but I think they can rise again.
They are.
In the midst of chaos.
Yep,
they're doing it. I think they are planning to do that, by the way.
I think that's underway. I think that's what we're seeing. So, All right, Professor Montero, thank you very much. Pleasure as always.
Thank you, Don.
You've been listening to CPR Sunday. I'm Don DeBar, your host, and look forward to seeing you again next week.